Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Nick Petrie, who's out with his new book, Tear It Down. It's the fourth installment in his series about combat veteran Peter Ash, who suffers from PTSD, and whose first three stories took us from the character's native Milwaukee to the Pacific Northwest to Colorado. This time, we go to Memphis. And Nick, Peter Ash, how has he revealed himself to us little by little now through four books, especially with his PTSD?
Well, he's a pretty complex character. I'm not a veteran myself, so I'm not writing from my own personal experience, but over the years, certainly before writing this series, and actually even more as I write this series, I've met and speak with a lot of men and women coming home from war and hearing about the challenges they're facing. I continue to find myself really moved by what they're going through. And Peter Ash, my main character, is based on those conversations with veterans. He's a very capable person. He's driven, but he's also struggling with this post-traumatic stress. So this shows up as an acute claustrophobia. He calls it the white static, and he can't be inside for more than a few minutes. And it's, I think, this very human combination of traits. He's not a Superman. He's somebody who is, like we all are, kind of struggling, with his own challenges. But it's that humanity, I think, that really resonates with readers, and is why the series has taken off so quickly.
As people have talked to you about this, I would think his character has probably developed in ways you couldn't have even imagined three books ago.
Yeah, it's really embarrassing to admit this, but I really wrote that first book, The Drifter, sort of thinking, well, he came home from the war, he had post-traumatic stress, and now he's all better. But the reality is that there are people who it's a short-term experience, but I talk with Vietnam vets who are still struggling today, every day, with their experiences in war. I mean, post-traumatic stress doesn't just go away for a big chunk of people who have it, and so that, I think that was the biggest takeaway for me is that this is something that is going to ebb and flow throughout, throughout his life, throughout the series, and to sort of, the challenge for me is to sort of show that evolution and to show the paths that Peter's taking to get better.
This book has two parallel storylines. You've got this talented musician in Memphis. You've got the war correspondent, and Peter Ash is sort of the glue that brings them all together. How did you take these two distinct stories and make them work on the same page?
Well, that was the challenge I set myself. I try to sort of give myself an assignment for every book. It's a way to sort of put some limits on it and to give me an organizing principle. And I had never told a story that had, as you put it, these two parallel storylines. And that was the challenge for me, was how to braid them together as the book progressed. And at a certain point, it just sort of took over. I had to make some choices about where certain things begin and end. But there's a point at which it just becomes very organic. It's not easy. The goal is to keep getting better. So I'm not coasting along. But that's the other reason I kind of set myself some challenges, is to force myself to up my game.
Well, one of the many things I love about your books is that you always take us somewhere new. This time it's Memphis. How'd you pick Memphis off the map?
this is sort of a goofy story. This book began in my mind as a kind of disaster novel, and Memphis is in the middle of a major earthquake zone, the New Madrid Seismic Zone, and four of the largest recorded earthquakes in American history take place in this area. But these characters... there's Wanda Wyatt, the war correspondent, Eli Bell, who's a street musician. They just kind of took over the book, and the earthquake never showed up because Memphis, kind of had taken over. And there are these, gun battles and car chases and homemade bombs and other things instead of the earthquake. But I don't know. Maybe I'll write an earthquake book at some point. Who knows?
Well, Peter, with his PTSD, he also understands that war is kind of exciting for the people that are in it. And we know the cliches, war is hell, and of course it is, but there's an element of adrenaline that goes along with it. Can you kind of explain how that affects Peter's life post-war?
Well, this is a very real phenomenon that people who have, just like there are adventure junkies who are, like to climb, rock climbing or bungee jumping or whatever else, When you have spent a chunk of your life in a war zone, you know, your body adjusts and you become used to that, you know, sort of level of adrenaline. And, you know, there's a line I use that you never feel more alive than when somebody's shooting at you. And I think that's true. I've done my share of climbing, and I ride a mountain bike, and I, you know, when there is risk, you know, life gets a little brighter. And that is kind of the dirty little secret of war, is that it is exciting, and that's how we get young men to go fight our wars, is because they don't know what the other side of that is. And like a lot of veterans, Peter is still chasing sort of that, the brightness of those moments. And he's doing it in a way that, you know, his goal is to help other people, but his goal is also to, you know, to feel that excitement again.
The book also features this sort of underbelly of Memphis. I think of Memphis and I think of great jazz and barbecue, that type of thing. But this is street gangs essentially taking over empty houses, flop houses type things, staying there. I don't think that's exclusive to Memphis. But as you research that whole phenomenon of that area of life, what did you find about how those characters live in real life versus what we saw on your page?
My goal is to depict things as realistically as I can. I've not lived that life, so I can't see it from the inside. But I've done a lot of research, and I spent a fair amount of time in Memphis driving around. And if you drive around Memphis, you see, especially in a big chunk of this book takes place in North Memphis and in Fraser, which are two, you know, particularly blighted neighborhoods. And you know, there are vacant homes, you know, sometimes three or four to a block. You drive down streets where, and you see the empty slabs where the houses have been taken down, but the slab hasn't been removed yet. There are places where there's just grass growing. There are these, you know, they're like empty teeth, the missing teeth and a smile in these neighborhoods. And one house is you know, freshly painted, and the yard is mowed, and the next house is covered with kudzu. I mean, it's really quite. It's quite a fascinating sort of place to go drive around, and the parts of Memphis are thriving, but a lot of it is not in the city proper. A lot of it is in the surrounding suburbs, and I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which has a lot of that same phenomenon. You know, think about Detroit, only smaller.
One of the other aspects of this whole idea of these people living in these abandoned houses is the interaction between them, because we who haven't lived that life think of these people, oh, they're tough guys, they're thugs, they're robbers, they've got guts to do this type of thing, and yet they have internal struggles about, we can't pull off this type of a robbery, and those types of conversations that they have, which I thought was really interesting. Was that something that you picked up as you realized the types of personalities of these people? Because they are down on their luck, and so they're not necessarily tough guys all the time.
Well, they're also kids. I mean, the four homeless young men that begin the book, I mean, they're not homeless as in shopping carts and sleeping bags. They're basically squatting in a succession of abandoned homes. But you know, they haven't chosen this life. They would do something else if they could. But they're hungry. They have no other options in a way. So it's a, you know, and they're, I mean, everybody's human, right? So the interesting thing to me is that the more people I talk to who are different from me, whose lives are different, who have made different choices, the more clear it is how much we have in common. And I think I try to bring some of that sort of common humanity to characters, whether they're good guys or bad guys, or, you know, sort of, we're not quite sure, you know, there are some good and some bad. And I'm a big fan of the gray areas. And I think, you know, part of the fun of writing truly bad guys, and there are some truly bad guys in this book, is, you know, even the bad guys are the heroes in the stories that they tell themselves. And so to show you that side of them makes them more human and more interesting and more compelling.
I'm chatting with Nick Petrie about his new book, Tear It Down. It's the latest in the Peter Ash series. Nick, you mentioned about this whole idea of people having gray area, and there's gray areas in life. It's kind of a two-edged sword, though, for Peter, right? Because he comes from the military where there's not a lot of gray area for day-to-day soldier. I mean, you got policymakers where there's gray area, but for the soldier, military is very black and white. He gets out, the life is gray. Does he have that internal struggle between those two types of lives?
Well, he absolutely does. I mean, just like all of us. And you know, part of his struggle is to, you know, kind of live a life of honor and of trying to still be of service, and really to serve people who don't have a lot of who don't really have the system to serve them. So that's a big part of his. It's both the struggle and it's the joy of being out of the military, is that he gets to live by his own code and not to he's not the victim of the policymakers who made, you know, some not great decisions.
When the last chapter of this book, incredibly intense, and it left me sitting up in my bed as I read this thing, how long did you have that whole scenario in mind before it actually came to the time to write it?
This book, I sort of knew what the end was probably by the time I was halfway through. I'm not a writer who outlines. I don't have a grand plan for a book. Every time I try that, it all sort of fizzles out. So I've learned to sort of begin at the beginning and I write my way through. And I do plenty of revision as I go. But this book, I was halfway through, maybe two-thirds of the way through before the end had sort of come into focus. But that's part of, for me, that's part of the fun. It's like reading very slowly, only I'm writing it first. You know, over the course of 6 months or 8 months or 10 months to write a book, to sort of like, huh, I wonder what's going to happen next. And I feel like if I don't have that sense of curiosity, then my reader's not going to either. And my goal is to keep you up late at night reading, because you just can't wait to get to the end and see what happens. And in a way, that's kind of how I write.
Well, to me, reading a scene like that has the same effect as when I first heard a song by U2 when I was in high school or something like that. I remember where I was. I'm going to remember where I was when I read that section of this Peter Ash book.
That's great.
For
that's a great
years.
Compliment. Thank you.
But one thing I've always wanted to ask you since your first book here, you were Nicholas Petrie the first time around with your first book. For the last three books, you've been Nick. Seems like a really easy switch and not a lot, but I'd be willing to bet there was a lot of discussion that went into that.
Well, it's funny. When the first book came out, my agent and my editor sort of said, well, you know, gee, you know, let's talk about your name. And, you know, my mom named me Nicholas, and so I just thought, well, I'll be Nicholas. And at a certain point, when the paperback was going to come out, the paperback distributors said, well, you know, has he ever considered Nick? And it had never occurred to me, even though everybody calls me Nick, you know, it fits on the book jacket better, and it's a better, you know, it's a better name for someone who is, you know, writes the kind of stuff I do. It's this sort of short, punchy, and it had never occurred to me. And my wife just looked at me and kind of said, "Duh," which happens a lot because I'm married. But there was a point at which it was just sort of a, why wouldn't I do this? And if I'm going to do it, I should. I mean, we basically did it between the hardcover and the paperback of that first book. And if I didn't do it then, it was only going to get harder to do, because all the books would be out there with Nicholas instead of Nick. So, you know, it just sort of ended up that way.
Well, it seems like people who have their names out there in the public, three syllables works great for a first and last name. Larry King, Stephen King, you know, those types of names. Nick Petrie, it works, right?
Yeah, I need my last name to be King.
Yeah, that seems to sell books, but these are selling just fine as they are because we love reading them. The book is Tear It Down. It's the latest Peter Ash novel. It's by Nick Petrie, formerly known as Nicholas Petrie. The book's available now wherever you buy your fine books. Nick, fantastic book here. Thanks for sharing it, and thanks for joining us today.
No, thanks so much for having me, Brian. I'm glad you liked the book.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.